Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, a week plus of training camp is now in the books.
Yeah.
I have to apologize. You know, they got a little bit of a storm going here, but I'm going to keep going because I don't think the heavy stuff's going to come down for quite a while.
Look, the only thing that's going to stop us is losing power, but so far I think we're going to be all right.
We'll push through, and if we lose power, nobody's going to hear this,
so. No, man, we'll cut it out.
Yeah. All right, you've been at camp, you've been caught on camera, you know, almost getting injured by Quintus Cephas?
No, that was
Reynolds.
Josh Reynolds.
Yeah. Reynolds and Okuda, right?
He really wasn't. I mean,
no. That was the first reaction, was like they were nowhere close to you, Eric. But then you claimed, "Well, I stepped back."
I did. I stepped back, and I like kind of like, and then I was told to step back further.
That's what you get. You know, you can't cross that line.
It's so they've changed the media access and they allow us to be on or as like right up on the field, and you step back because you're trying to like make sure that you're giving them room and whatnot, but like it's so easy to just unconsciously just keep gravitating forward and forward and forward. Like I always laughed like when I watched like coaches that like we're like calling plays like 5 yards onto the field, like not even paying attention to where they were.
Oh yeah. But that's my favorite part.
It's so easy to do. Like I just keep getting closer and closer and closer. It's just an unconscious thing.
Yeah, I guess we got to get you one of those, like the button where it says, don't push this button just to entice you to push it.
It's man, I tell you, this regime compared to the last regime and their relationship with the media is just startlingly different. Like they know your name. You're allowed to have a lot more access. Like when Patricia was there, we had to be in bleachers. Like we couldn't even like roam outside of the bleachers. We had to stay in this designated area. Then we had to move to this other designated area for interviews, and they roped off a section from where the players walk through and then where we were supposed to be, which basically eliminates your ability to like have social interaction with players as they're heading inside, which is a big part of the job. And this regime, they treat us like adults, and they're like, yeah, you know what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. Like you're not supposed to walk up to Sheila Hamp when she's walking there with, you know what I mean? Like you're supposed to just let her pass. But if like a rookie's walking by and you want to have a chat with them and introduce yourself, then that's totally acceptable. But it's a very night and day thing. And it's really nice to be able to have that kind of access.
Well, speaking of that access, let's dig right in and start talking about the offense first with the quarterbacks. Obviously, no competition for Jared Goff is for number one, but we got the Tim Boyle and David Blau backup situation.
Yeah, they've been rotating, right? So each day they flip who's number two, who's number three. Goff has looked pretty steady, and he's done what I expect. He's still making mistakes because that's part of what happens in training camp. Like it's, nobody is infallible on the football field. And you know, he's thrown a couple of balls that are potentially like dangerous. Like, you know, you want to make sure you're not sending somebody over the middle to get, you know, demolished. So you got to clean a couple of those things up. He was holding the ball a little bit long, but he quickened that up when the pads came on. The other two, not so much. They started to, when they were forced to kind of quicken the pace, the accuracy dipped quite a bit for them. When there were no pads on, they looked pretty good. They were throwing some nice, like better throws than what you'd seen in last year's camp. Boyle, in my opinion, looked further along than Blau. But when the pads came on this week, troublesome. You know, it's they both are having their, they both look uncomfortable, and it's taken some time. They're starting to come around, but it's a slower learning curve, or a slower process to kind of get through that learning curve. Whereas Goff, I think he adjusted pretty rapidly, and he's playing well. You know, like I said, still got to clean some things up, but the quarterback position is very clear. You have one guy and two backups that, in my opinion, might be fighting for one spot. I know we've talked about this before. Some of the comments from Dan Campbell recently about if those two can't cut it, they're not opposed to getting somebody else. And that kind of, if they're taking that approach, then they might be taking the approach of, well, we're just going to keep the winner and see what happens. And so, quarterback hasn't been overly exciting.
Well, there's no surprise there. So let's flip over to the running back position. The big news is Greg Bell, who's hasn't quite been released. He has been released, but not really.
Yeah. So, so on day two, he went down like pretty hard. He immediately got help from the trainers, and they could get him up to his feet, but they had a real hard time trying to get him off the field to the sidelines. And
was
so
this a wooziness concussion type situation,
this
or
was
this a leg injury?
It was a hip and back so at one point he was like, he grabbed his hip, and then another point he it turns out it was both. But they brought the cart, and it was severe enough that he couldn't even sit down on the cart. Right. Yeah. It was pretty scary. And so, so he left the field, and it took him a really long time to exit the field. He had help from both trainers, and it looked pretty bad. Like he was very uncomfortable. He felt really bad for the young man. And so, he goes through some MRIs the following day. They get some more tests done. And then on today, which is day seven, Wednesday, he is officially waived, but waived with an injury designation, obviously, because he was hurt playing football. So the way it works is, yes, he no longer counts against the 90-man roster, but if he passes through waivers, he will revert back to the Lions. And then when he does, he will revert back to their injured reserve. At that point, the Lions can either A, keep him on injured reserve, which would shut him down for the year, but they would keep him on their roster. They would still pay him, and they would keep his contract intact. If basically like redshirting him, but you're paying him to redshirt, right? Mm-hmm.
They're doing now in college football too.
Right. Right. And if they, the other option is, if they don't want to pay him the full amount, then they can cut him a deal and pay him a lesser amount and reach a contract settlement. And then he becomes a free agent where he can do whatever he wants. Right. And so that really depends what the team wants to do, what he wants to do. And, we'll kind of see where that goes, but he's got to clear waivers first. But my expectation is he clears waivers, reverts back, and then they really like him. So I wouldn't be surprised if they kept him on IR.
All right. So with that move, the Lions went out and picked up another running back. In this case, it was Justin Jackson, formerly of the, I don't know if it was Los Angeles still at the time, Los Angeles Chargers.
Played at Northwestern.
Yeah, played at Northwestern. Former member of my fantasy team for a week or two back a few years ago. What have we seen out of him so far?
Not a ton. He's repping at the end because the other guys are pretty set in their ways. Swift is the number one. Jamal is number two. Craig Reynolds has consistently been the number three. Godwin and Igwebukwe and Jamar Jefferson have been kind of rotating through those back four or five spots. And then Jackson has kind of been at the back of that because he's still relatively new. Now, technically, I think Jackson replaced another player, but essentially it's a one for one at the position at this point. He's got a little bit of return ability, but they haven't really used him in that aspect. He's a veteran. I think he's played 4 years in the league. So, you can't discount him because you know, he's shown he can exist, right? Enough to be on a fantasy team. And so, but he's got a tough road. Like right now, Swift, Williams, and Reynolds look like they're going to be on the roster. And then Igbokwe with his special teams is probably going to be your four. And Jamar Jefferson is really trying to crack it, that roster. And he's had a couple of splash plays over the last week or last couple of days. But, you know, Jackson's just nice. It's just more depth. But, you know, right now he's on the outside looking in. He's got to acclimate quick. And I think preseason it would be good to help him out.
Jason Kabinda, he's on the pup list. It's not that we haven't seen him in this training camp, but
right,
you know, it was in a team meeting type setting.
That picture is awesome. That him aggressively nodding.
Yeah, no, at Dan it's Campbell's intense.
Speech. Yeah. That's Kabinda, right? Like he's been at practice. He has, you know, been watching practice. He has been when practice ends, he's still allowed to like train on his own. And so he's been getting some work in on the jugs machine. So technically that's not a coached participation type level. So it's still kind of allowed because it's part of his thing. You can count it as kind of is part of his rehab.
Yeah.
So he's been putting some work in and, but he hasn't been upgraded from that spot yet. So, the running backs, you know, they've only had pads on twice. And on those days, the running backs, I mean, they started to pop a little bit. It'd be nice to see Kabinda get back in. With him being out, they've been using some tight ends and that kind of H-back role, H-back fullback role.
They got Garrett a lot Griffin, of tight ends to do so.
Yeah, Garrett Griffin did it. Nolan Given has done it. They tried crossbreeding Zylstra to do it. They moved away from that though, and they went back. I think we've seen Brock Wright do it. So I know James Mitchell's capable, but we'll get to why he isn't in the mix for that yet in a minute. But yeah, I mean, look, Swift is
where's Joe Dahl when you need him?
Swift is, Swift looks really good. I mean, he really does. He's very quick, very fast.
That's good. As long as he's healthy. Look great.
That's the next thing I was going to get to. They're managing it. The plan is when they go back to back padded practices, they then want to give him the third day off because they want to ease his workload so that they can manage him better during the season. So for example, they went pads Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, no pads. And so he just didn't participate. He was off to the side. He was actually holding bags and helping Deuce out with some things, but he wasn't a participant. And I think that's their approach to kind of mitigating his injury history and trying to make sure that he stays fresh. Because when he's fresh, he's very challenging to cover. I mean, like in a passing game, he's almost uncoverable at this point. He looks good. He looks good. Jamal looks like Jamal. Craig has shown some bursts. Like I said, Godwin's speed has been on display. I know people are still on him for the fumbles late in the year, but his speed is really a unique change of pace. And then, like I said, Jamar has flashed a couple of times. There's still a lot of work that he's got to do. His special teams are getting better, but he's flashed and he's trying to stay in the mix.
All right, flipping over to the wide receiver group, there is a tiny bit of movement there. Quintez Cephas is, you know, as we know, is injured. Maurice Alexander was brought in to keep the wide receiver group at nine. Jameson Williams who everyone wants to see. He's still on the NFI list, right? Not the pup list, but the NFI list. And it is looking like he's going to miss the first few weeks of the season.
Everyone is waiting to watch him.
Yeah, he's a first round draft pick and they moved up to get him.
We're
accustomed to Aiden Hutchinson.
I'm sitting in the media area and Lomas Brown, who works with Dan Miller, right, on the radio.
Yep.
He comes over in the area and he's of course a hugely popular guy. And I was talking to him about the offensive line and we were talking about Sewell and And then in the middle of him talking about offensive line play, Jameson comes walking by and he stops everything and he points and he goes, I can't wait to see that guy go. Like, he, even Lomas, who's like, who paused his talk about the OL to point, you know, to Jameson and be like, man, that guy's going to be fun. So it's yeah, he's going to be good. And the excitement level is high everywhere. The starters though are playing well, like they're going to be okay. Even without, even if he has to miss some time at the beginning of the year, Josh Reynolds has really elevated his game a little bit more than I think what people thought he was capable of. DJ Chark has been as advertised. What I've liked best about.
Go ahead. I was going to have a question. I have a follow-up question on DJ Chark. Go ahead and talk about Chark.
What I like best about Chark is that when he makes a mistake, he rebounds the very next play to like do something better to like make up for it. He doesn't let those things kind of, you know, sink in, and he doesn't make back-to-back mistakes either. He's got a good attitude. He has a good presence. He's good leadership. He hasn't really unleashed it yet, but you can see when he runs, like his gait is like that sprinter gait where he can cover more ground faster. And I'm excited to see when they start turning him loose because it could be fun. And then St. Brown has been St. Brown. He had a drop, which surprised me because those don't happen very often, if at all. And you know, you'd think that might linger on him, but that was like the same day he hurdled Bobby Price in a one-on-one drill. And then also like made a one-handed grab and had a big play on a jet sweep. Like so St. Brown is still impacting in a lot of ways. And the cool thing about St. Brown is that they are creating matchup opportunities for him where they're using motion or they're putting him in they're trying to get him matched up against a linebacker, or there's like a lot of different ways that they're being creative with getting him opportunities. And we're learning a little bit more about Ben Johnson's approach with how he's using those guys. So Chark, what were you going to say?
Well, how is his chemistry with Jared Goff? How's his communication with Jared Goff?
So his communication is on point because they've been working independently during the summer, and it's been very natural. It looked fine in the spring. It looks better now. I wouldn't say anybody, even St. Brown, has the chemistry that Goff has with Reynolds. That just is like, that's like a really strong like bond between those two. But he puts a lot of throws in good spots for Chark, and Chark is pretty reliable. And so I don't think that there's going to be that much of a hiccup. They've tempered a lot of stuff, right? They're not going to unleash everything. They're still putting a lot of basics in, but I'm encouraged by how they've done.
All right. Flipping over to the tight end group. The biggest group on the roster. You touched on a couple of guys who have stepped in the Kabinda role. Yeah. Let's start with Hockenson. How has he looked so far?
So Hockenson typically dominates in training camp. He has every season, off season, we've covered him. But they haven't had to lean on him as much because they have other options. And so he's been a little bit more subdued in that passing game aspect. I don't mean to say that in a discouraging way. I think that's because they have other options now, which they haven't in the past. They'd almost have to force the ball to him because he was the best option that they had on any given play. And so, he hasn't they haven't had to force the ball to him, which then it has resulted in them not having to make spectacular plays. But on the flip side, you've seen more sound blocking out of him. He had his best play of camp was he lines up at tight end right next to Penei Sewell, and Hutchinson is lined up in between the Sewell and Hockenson. And Hutch is going to try and attack Sewell. And so at the snap, as Hutch is getting out of his stance, and which we all know is really quick, he's getting out and he's leaning hard towards Sewell, and Hockenson just crack blocked him, just like pushed right down and put him on his butt. I mean, like, not even a little bit. Like, he slid a little bit. Like, he rocked him really good.
Welcome to the big leagues, rookie.
Exactly. Then Campbell called it his welcome to the NFL moment. And not, but the thing that I liked most about that was that Hockenson put him on his butt and then, without a hesitation, went right into the route and got open and made the catch as well. It was as complete of a tight end play as you've seen him make. And that's the stuff that's more encouraging with Hawk, is that he's starting to look more like that complete tight end that a lot of people are looking for, because, you know, the spectacular catches and stuff, they're still there, but they just haven't been as prevalent because they haven't had the force in the ball as much. Behind Hawk, you've seen Brock Wright and Garrett Griffin fighting out for like kind of that blocking tight end type of role. The two of them have actually been working together after practice on their blocking. They've been doing ice baths together. They've been working together all over, and they are seemingly in competition with one another for like a spot. So when Campbell broke down what he was looking for in tight ends, he was saying, look, I want a blocking tight end, and these are the two guys that are up for that. And so I still think they like Brock because they tend to lean to him a little bit more. But Griffin is also a guy, because of that H-back versatility, that he offers them something that Brock doesn't. And if Kabinda is not going to be ready for PUP, then that's an easy path for Griffin to make the roster.
You mentioned James Mitchell.
Yeah.
What are we seeing out of James Mitchell so far?
Not a lot. He's done individual drills and he's done a little bit of 7-on-7s, but they haven't put him in 11-on-11s, which means we haven't seen any blocking out of him. And we've only been limited in the kind of passes that the pass catching, and he's a little late to the party. So he's a little bit further down on the depth chart. Right. So I haven't seen a ton from him. And again, that's by design. And the thing with James Mitchell is that you got to remember, he's a couple of months ahead in the ACL process than Jameson is. And so they're taking it slow with him as a fifth round pick. And if they're taking it slow with him in this process, the same is going to be true with Jameson.
No, even when Jameson, they shouldn't rush anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, especially not now.
Right. And so when Jameson does come off the PUP, I fully expect them to take a similar approach, in that they're going to take it slow with him. They're not going to push him into stuff. They're going to work into individuals, work in some sevens, then get 11s, and then need a whole bunch of time at 11s before they're going to clear them. And so it's, I still fully expect it to take maybe another month after he's cleared before we might see him in like full on game situations. Based on how we've seen them approach Mitchell.
When it comes to, I don't know if you could talk about this, but do we see a lot of two tight end sets at practice?
I'm not supposed to, but I mean, I can kind of say yes. Like, I can't tell you like where they lined up and stuff like that, but I can say yes, there have been situations where they do two. And a lot of that is because there's no Kabinda, right? So you're H-back. Sometimes they're using two next to each other. That's just part of the thing. Zylstra is the other guy that's in the mix, because Campbell called Zylstra like a hybrid, right? Like more of like a pass catching tight end. And that's what they're looking for in that kind of tight end three role. And if that's the case, Zylstra's only competition really for that role is Devin Funchess, who's been injured pretty much all of camp. And he has been back for a couple of days now, but he's still not repping back in 11s now. I think he did one 11 rep that I saw on Wednesday, but he's not really doing much. And right now with Funchess not really there, Zylstra is taking advantage, and every ball that comes his way, he's catching, and he's looking like a big receiver who's playing tight end, right? Like, so Zylstra's really making noise for himself. And I know he's probably like tight end five on a roster that's only going to keep three, but there's enough there that if James Mitchell isn't quite ready, and Brock Wright and Griffin are only fighting for one spot, you could end up seeing Zylstra slip in as one of the three tight ends. So I don't want anyone to count him out, because he's playing well in the role they're giving him.
Derek Deese Jr., Nolan Given, not seeing much of them.
Well, no, because there's so many of these guys. When reps come, it's hard. Yeah, right. So the only time that Given showed up is when he was playing H-back, and he met Malcolm Rodriguez in the hole, and it was a just car crash. Oh, and boy. So
we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. One thing to note, and I know we already moved on to tight ends, but going back to the wide receivers, Corey Sutton, undrafted free agent out of Appalachian State. He retired.
Yeah. Yep. This is the second UDFA to retire, and then Pennacini in the last, what, 2-3 months, something like that, right? So,
I guess if they do a few days in camp and realize, well, the NFL's really not going to be for me. And then
move on. We talked about this previously. We don't really know what's going on in their personal lives. And so it's hard for us to really speculate what goes into the decision.
All right. Moving on to the offensive line, the most fun part of training camp so far. From what I've heard, and you'll probably back it up, is Penei Sewell has been the most dominant player in camp, and it's not even close.
Well, I'll tell you, when they didn't have pads on, the defenders flashed more, because that's just natural. The offensive line can't do as much. Right. And so there was a fantastic move on Saturday that Hutch put on Sewell, where he did a ghost step outside and then swam back inside, went right over Sewell, and Sewell was just like, couldn't even touch him. It was a fantastic move by Hutch. But again, no pads. So they put pads on after their day off, and you get that one-on-one matchup that everybody's been waiting for. And Sewell just anchors, shuts him down. And Hutchinson tries a little stutter step thing. Sewell waits, hits him. He tries to spin. Sewell doesn't fall for it. And he just, engulfs him. And it's like, he just absolutely swallowed Hutch up like he was just in anybody. And that's going to happen with Hutchinson. Like it's a rookie, that's part of it. But, and you're going up against Sewell, who is arguably in contention to be considered the best player on this roster. On Monday, there wasn't anybody out there that was better than him. And he's got that aggression. He's got that, he's such a unique athlete in how he moves and how fast and how strong he is. And it's just, those pads came on, and this offensive line took on a whole different attitude. And in the one-on-one drills, not a single starting offensive lineman lost one rep in those one-on-one drills. Like, they were just that dominant. And look, they should be, right? They absolutely should be dominant at this point. And so Sewell is growing and looking better. Decker looks solid. You're seeing a little bit of inconsistency with Decker at times. Some of that is he's got a lingering foot injury that he had over the summer, and they're giving him rest days to kind of account for that. But it also has to do with the fact that Charles Harris looks really good, or they're, stacking edge rushers and making things harder on him. But he's looked good. Jonah Jackson has been fantastic. You don't get the forgotten man,
even though he was the Pro Bowler last year.
Yeah. And he's gotten better. And like, when Hutch is pushed into the three, Jonah's got him a handful of times, and he's just anchored and done well with it. And then there's other times when, Jackson might make a mistake or two, but like, for the most part, he's been consistently solid. Frank is Frank. Look, Frank against Aleem is fantastic. And when he had those one-on-ones with McNeil, the first rep, he stoned McNeil. McNeil couldn't do anything about it. And then the second time through, McNeil actually pushed Frank back a couple steps, But it didn't take much for Frank to just reset his hips and get his hands on him. And then he just absolutely held him up, and there was nothing McNeil could do. Because when Frank when Frank gets that balance right, his athleticism, his strength is like, he's going to do that to anybody. It doesn't matter who they are. That's what he can do. And so I still think Frank's the best player on this team. I think Panay is making a case for it for sure. But that starting offensive line, they've looked really good in pads, and that's what you want, right? You want those guys to look great.
The key is to keep all those guys healthy. What about the reserves? Are we seeing I'd love to see him bring that Matt Nelson as the sixth offensive lineman back. Mm-hmm. They have a few more, you know, run plays in store for mm-hmm. that this season. But when they bring in the second and third units, how are they been looking?
Well, so first of all, when Decker has gotten a day off, Sewell has switched over to left tackle. So
what have I been telling you, Eric? That's the future.
And Matt Nelson has played
two years away, but that's the future.
Maybe. But yes, I think Matt Nelson is still that sixth guy, right? They keep pushing him up. At one point last year, they used to switch Matt Nelson between left and right to try and get him flexibility. But I think they've realized the fact that if Decker ever goes down, Sewell's going to play right tackle or left tackle. And if Sewell ever goes down, then Matt Nelson's still going to play right tackle. So they've been fully immersing Matt Nelson at right tackle to get him familiar, because no matter what happens at tackle, he's their OT3 and he's going to play at that four spot or at that six spot, that right tackle spot. Right. Now Dan Skipper was also on the NFI. He had an illness to start camp. And what we saw was Obinna Ezay repping with the second team at left tackle. But not to be outdone, he's also repping at right tackle on the third team. So he's doing double duty and flipping sides. And that's and each practice, he's looking a little bit more comfortable. His wingspan is very noticeable. And then the fact that they're cross-training him on both sides and he's able to do double duty and keep his endurance up, all very encouraging signs for Ezay. Will he develop enough to make the roster? It's hard to tell, but he is putting himself in a position where he's going to look like a guy that is worth keeping around long-term, even if it's on a practice squad, so that they can develop him. Now the interior guys, they've been rotating them. Stenberg has spent all that time at left guard for most of his career. Well, they've put him over on the right side, which is more naturally aggressive for him, and it fits his style a little bit better. Kramer, they flipped over to left guard. And then Kevin Jarvis has even been getting some reps at both left and right guard, right, as well as at right tackle.
Because he had to play everywhere at Michigan State.
Well, look, when Skipper was out and Decker was out and Nelson and Sewell were at number one, it was Jarvis that came in with the second team at right tackle because that was their best option. Now they've signed Darren Paulo since.
Brought him back.
Yeah. And so Paulo has been helping out on that third team to kind of lighten the load, but he's been playing left and right side as well. And, but he's still, I mean, he's still on that third team. McCollum and Obed haven't stood out as much. McCollum didn't practice on Wednesday and it's not clear why. But you know, Evan Brown, is the guy at center anyways, and he's looked solid. You know, that's what you expect. So in my mind, you're starting five. Your Matt Nelson is your number six and Evan Brown is your number seven. Those are things that we expected. That's what's producing out on the field. How many people they keep after that, they're going to keep at least one, is very up in the air. It could be Obiaze does enough to make noise. It could be that Tommy Kramer. That Tommy Kramer is still the guy that I like the best. Is it Stenberg? And I know Jarvis has, you know, look, he got a lot of money and he's position versatile like Kramer. And so
I could see, even though I'm still shocked, I could see them keeping him around on the practice squad all year.
Yeah.
For that very reason, for his flexibility.
And the crazy thing is when they've done things late in practice where like they've moved Jonah Jackson to center, they've took Kevin Jarvis and put him up at first team left guard, which is a little surprising, like even over Tommy Kramer. So it's the depth is coming around. It's still a work in progress, but it's still coming around, and you have to be encouraged where the offensive line is.
All right. So let's move on to the defensive side of the ball. And you've already talked the way we've looked at this defense heading into training camp. And I agreed with you the way you laid it out on paper. It made a lot of sense to me. And I that's what I thought it was going to look like too, with Aiden Hutchinson as the right side rush end we'd be facing, you know, against Taylor Decker throughout practice. But what we've seen is Hutchinson on the left side or on the strong side of the defense, playing that big defensive end role and spending a lot of his time going against Penei Sewell with Charles Harris over on the other side on that rush end side. No surprises in the middle with Aleem McNeil and Michael Brockers. So what have you seen so far with the defensive line?
So we've seen them operate as like a four-man front is in their base, but then we've also seen them shift to like five-man front. We've also seen them shift to like a big version of a four-man front as well, which means they're using more defensive tackles on the field. It really just depends on what their approach is. There's a lot of different ways that they can go in and attack. And they have versatile pieces that kind of fit in that make it work, right? Like the standard kind of format is like you laid out, where you've got Charles and then the two guys in the middle and then Hutchinson. Basically, whichever side the tight end goes to, that's typically where you're going to expect to see Hutchinson, but it's not always the case, right? A lot of times if you line them up on the tight end side, then the tight end will, you know, stay in and chip him, or they'll get a double team on him and then he'll draw attention, which then frees up one-on-ones for some other guys. And then if they don't line him up on the tight end side, then he gets a one-on-one more often than that. And then that's an advantage for him. So he's really impacting the defense of line in a positive way, no matter where they line him up. And they shift him inside. They use him at the three. They've used him on both edges. They've stacked edge rushers and then had him, you know, either be the bulldog in front or the sweeper sweeping like agility guy behind it. He's really done a lot of different things, and he has been he's been treated like a veteran. Like they just try to beat him. There's no hesitation with him. They're throwing everything they have. The offense is throwing everything they have at him in order to knock him off of his game. And sometimes it works, and he's got to adapt and learn, and sometimes it doesn't. And he looks really special. And you know, those are all part of what we're going to have to get used to expecting in the first year from him. Now
he's been staying late. That's a good sign.
Arriving early too, right? Yeah, he comes in there, he gets on the field before everybody else, and then he comes out after, and he does some work after as well. And yeah, so he's a worker. He's a hard worker. It's really interesting. This, you know, we've talked in the past about how they have like basically like three different defensive ends. And you've got your down end, rush end, like Charles, and then you've got like, you know, your base end, like Aiden, and then you've got this hybrid, like Julian Aguara. And they've really used Julian in a lot of different ways. Sometimes they'll use Julian as an end and then push Hutchinson inside. Sometimes Julian will just straight replace Hutchinson, or maybe just straight replace Harris. So they use Julian as an outside linebacker, they use him as a base or as a sub package base end, like, or sub package end. And then where he's like putting his hand in dirt and everything. Like, so Julian's getting a lot of use in a lot of different ways, and they're taking a similar approach with James Houston. So they're trying to use him in a similar way that they use Julian. I think when Romeo comes back, he'll be more like the Charles Harris, and you might see some Julian type things mixed in with him as well. But you know, Romeo's going to be on the pup, it looks like, for a while. I expect him to enter the regular season on the pup at this point. Pascal, we found out, had surgery on his hernia, on his sports hernia. So it sure looks like, even if he had it early in the, or, you know, right when it happened in the spring, it's still like a 6-week thing where you can't do anything. And that would put him right like at the end of training camp, but then he's got to get back in football shape. So I kind of am expecting Josh Pascal to open up on the pup as well. Which, you know, that's two big edge rushers and important edge rushers that you're taking out of the rotation. At the same time, you know, I don't think they're going to rush either of those guys back because they're part of the long-term future. And when they do return, it's going to be a big boost for the line. And they have depth because you've seen guys like Austin Bryant step. Austin Bryant is a guy who I wrote off like almost instantly when they drafted Hutchinson. And then when they drafted Pascal, I was like, okay, Austin Bryant's career in Detroit is over. And now you have Romeo and Pascal on pup, and all of a sudden Austin Bryant is back in the mix.
He's playing a lot.
And he is constantly in the backfield. I mean, like I know he's playing against the twos a lot, but he is constantly making noise. Now, I want to see what he does against a higher level of competition to see if it's actually fool's gold or not, but he's doing what he's supposed to do. If he is a capable NFL player, he should be taking advantage, and he is, and he's doing it consistently. And then you have John Kaminsky, who is a guy who is basically like, he does everything positionally that Hutchinson does, where he can play inside, outside. He can set the edge. He can, you know, stop from a three technique against the run. Like, and he's been playing well as well. You've seen him get some sacks. You've seen more athleticism. And I don't know if it's necessarily just like, they understand how to use this style of player well, or if he's actually just really good, but he's looked sharp as well. So there's a lot of these edge rushers that are doing well to insert themselves into favorable situations. And then on the interior, McNeil and Brockers are the staples. When they go to three interior defensive tackles, which they've done quite frequently, Levi was typically the guy that they would go to. Now Levi's banged up, and so that has created an opportunity for Jayshon Cornell. When they go to the twos, Cornell's typically with the twos, and then Isaiah Bugs has usually been your number two reserve.
How has Isaiah Bugs been acclimating?
He's right in the mix now. He's with the second team all the time, and so that's good for him. I don't know if I'm ready to say he's in or anything like that, but he's putting himself in a nice spot, and he's showing that, you know, that he can contribute. Bruce Hector is starting to get into the mix a little bit more.
We're
going to
see some Bruce Hector this year.
Slowly but surely.
He might not make the 53, but we'll see him.
And then Taylor, the rookie out of App State, he's looked he has flashed at times as well. And, you know, he's known for his first step, and like, you've seen him from like a reserve nose tackle spot at times find ways out to get to the screen before the running back can even get up the field. Like, he just has that like burst and quickness. And if there's nobody in front of him, he can get to the spot fast. And then you've seen other plays where he's this short little stocky guy, but he's got an interception from the defensive line. He's knocked the ball down. Like, he knocked in the spring, he had like three knockdowns. He had another one in camp the other day. And like, he keeps flashing. And now, is he flashing enough that he's going to make the 53 again? I don't know, but he's another guy that I'm like, this is someone they're going to want to keep. Even if it's the practice squad, there's flashed here and there, and that's what they want.
James Houston.
Yeah.
But what has he done so far in camp?
Not a ton, right? Like, they're really taking it slow with him. He's only on the edge at this point. He's basically backing up Romeo or Julian. So what you're seeing here is that you're seeing Charles Harris on that rush end spot. And then Julian is the backup. And then sometimes you're seeing guys like Anthony Pittman be the third team on that side, and then Houston is in line after that. We've seen a couple of times when Houston has worked his way up, and he's even flashed a couple of times with some pretty, you know, impressive pass rushing moves, like bends and dips and stuff like that, that like, just you know you don't see guys, you know, be able to be that quick off the edge, and his size plays into that. But they are really taking it their time with him and really trying to make sure he gets in favorable spots. I'm getting less and less. I like kind of kept him on the back burner, thinking like, I'd love to find a way to make a roster spot for him. I'm starting to think that he's more long-term project. He'll, and that his chances of making the roster and the way that he is currently performing are going to be hard. Now, I say that, but when the lights come on in Atlanta or in Detroit against Atlanta, and he flashes, and then everybody's going to fall in love with him, and they're going to be like, oh my gosh, how is this guy not like doing more in practice? And I don't know, some guys are just, they do that sometimes. Maybe it'll be because he'll be against third stringers, but right now it's a slow roll with him. And but the you have seen the talent flash that's there, and so that's encouraging. And you know what, this time at this stage in training camp, nothing is solidified, right? And a lot of things change. Look, at this time last year, neither AJ Parker nor Jerry Jacobs were in a spot to make the roster, right? And then both of them came in and they changed in the back half of camp, and you see that. So I'm not writing him off, but he's got some work to do.
All right, so let's move on to the linebackers, and I guess we have to start with Malcolm Rodriguez. He's starting week one.
No. He is consistently with the threes, but at the same time, the linebackers have a very specific role. Okay, so let me explain the quick difference. Anzalone, we talked to Anzalone today, and he tried to explain this to us a little bit more. Essentially, the role last year for him was he was in a wait and react type of situation, which means you have to wait for the defensive line to react to the offensive line, then you have to react to the hole, and then you go and then you wait for the running back or the whoever, and then you make the play. So there's a lot of, you have to wait and then anticipate off of the multiple waiting factors in front of you. In this scheme, it's very much there's your gap, go hit your gap. And it's more aggressive. And so now, instead of waiting and then trying to react, he is now finding his target and attacking that target. And so that makes his job a little bit easier. And so everyone has always, you know, been asking the question, like, how are they, you know, what's going to happen with this linebacker unit? How's it going to make it easier? Well, it's easier because they're having to make less decisions, and they just got to play downhill. And the player who is probably the best at doing this right now on this roster is Malcolm Rodriguez. His ability to hit the right gap and hit it hard is shocking. Like, I say this because he's so impressive with it. He hits hard. He hits the right gap. He's fast enough to get out and blow up screens. But the reason we're talking so highly about him isn't because he's going to start. It's just because the other guys just aren't doing that yet, but yet they can still do all these other things that Malcolm is still learning. And so, yeah, Malcolm is going to flash. And in preseason, he's going to flash, and people are going to lose their minds. And look, he's got a lot of really good things going for him. But he has to stack it. He's got to stack these days. He's got to stack these reps. He's got to prove that he can do what he needs to do. But like, coach is talking about him every game, every pre-practice, or, you know, every press conference ahead of practice. The last 3 days, I think he's talked about Malcolm Rodriguez, because that's how much the kid is flashing right now. Highly intelligent, understands his role, and he does everything that you want. It's just, he's got to get a little bit more experience, and his size is a little bit of a detriment. But I think Campbell said it best. At his size and the way that he approaches, in order for him to make a play, we play in, play out, everything has to be perfect, because if it's not perfect, he doesn't have the size to recover, right? Like, he can get washed with it. So when everything is perfect for him, he's great. The thing is asking a sixth round rookie to be perfect play in, play out is not realistic. And so, yes, the flashes are there. Yes, this intelligence is there, but can he be perfect every play? That's unrealistic. And that's why they're going to take it slow with him. That's why they're going to, even though he's going to look like the best linebacker at times, they need to see more consistency. They need to know that they can trust him to be perfect when they put him out on the field. And the more he does that, the more opportunities he's going to get, the better he's going to have an opportunity to play. But right now, he's still with the threes, which is, you know, look, he's he was with the fours, now he's with the threes. So we'll see how high he goes after that, but like he's getting there. So you're starting three, or your three guys in the rotation are Anzalone, Barnes, and Board. And they pretty much are rotating those three guys all the time. Anzalone is probably going to be the guy who never leaves the field. And then Barnes and Board are, yeah, I assume he's there. Now look, they're switching who calls the plays in practice. Like today it was Anzalone, yesterday it was Barnes. They're switching who's the play caller, who has that green dot. But I fully expect it to be Anzalone's. That's one of his traits that they love about him: leadership, understanding of the defense, et cetera, right? But he's rotating right now. And if he doesn't end up staying on the field all the time, then they're gonna have to rotate that green dot too. So those three guys still look clearly ahead. They're rotating that off the ball linebacker number four. Sometimes it's Jared Davis, sometimes it's Anthony Pittman, sometimes it's Sean Dion Hamilton. Today it was Sean Dion Hamilton, who they have said popped more on film once the pads came on, and they're starting to see what the traits that they liked in him from last season. So it's very wide open competition still. A couple days ago, Campbell said, basically alluded to the fact that they're going to have three linebackers that contribute on defense, and then a couple of guys that are special teamers. And so if you extrapolate that to what we're seeing in practice, it seems like Anzalone, Barnes, and Board are probably the three that you're going to see on defense. You're going to keep Malcolm because that's your four, and that leaves one spot. And that one spot player has to be someone who is position flexible, can play both spots, and can play on special teams. And right now,
Jared Davis,
that seems like a competition between Jared Davis and Anthony Pittman. And right now, based on what I've seen, it might be Anthony Pittman's job, to be honest. Mm. Now, Davis is, of course, when you light him on fire and send him on a blitz, he still is the Jared Davis we've all seen before. Like, he explodes like nobody's business, and that part of his game is just still incredible. But is he position flexible enough? Does he understand the role of the off the ball linebacker? Kind of basically, like, again, reading between the lines of what Campbell has said this week, we think he can contribute like off the edge in situations. We think he can do special teams, but we're giving him a chance to prove he can do it off the ball. And so that's the hiccup, is which one of the, and the Pittman was also almost the same thing. Pittman, it was like special teams are fantastic, he can also contribute on the edge, but really we're giving him a chance to learn off the ball. And so whichever one of these guys learns how to play off the ball, it's probably going to be that fifth linebacker. I think Josh Woods is a little bit out of the mix, and Hamilton maybe has a chance to step up, but it sure looks like Pittman versus Davis for that five spot at this stage.
All right, let's move to the defensive backfield. I guess most importantly, we'll start with the cornerback. Samani Oruwariye is settled in at the number one corner spot. Yep. And Jeff Okuda, he's been playing in practice, and he's facing off against Will Harris for that number one spot on the other side.
Yep, and they've been rotating not just practices, but also in different series. Okuda will be outside one series, Harris the next. And what they've originally, Amani just played the right side of the field, and then the other two rotated through the left. And then recently now they've been switching them, where Owari is getting familiar with the other side of the field, and same thing with the other two. So they're not just keeping them at their static spots, even though for the most part of camp, that's kind of what they were doing, and that's probably what they'll do when the regular season comes. But they are familiarizing themselves with the other spots as well, as you know, you see across the roster. So yeah, look, Okuda, you can still see a little hitch every once in a while where he looks like he's still recovering. And I think they know that. So that's part of the reason why they're not forcing him into the ones all the time. But the other part of it is that Will Harris has looked pretty sharp. He's really physical. He's a better athlete than he gets credit for. There was a play either like, I'm trying to remember which day it was. I think it was three. Harris was covering Josh Reynolds at the goal line, and Josh ran a quick out, and Harris read it, jumped the route, dove, got a PBU. On the very next play, Hockenson ran a very similar route. And because in this, the, you know, that, that split zone scheme that they run, instead of Harris sticking with the receiver, he peeled off and then took Hockenson when Hockenson came into his area. And then he did the same thing. He jumped the route, dove, and got the PBU right at the goal line again. And so, like, it was as two of the most impressive plays that, that I've seen him make in the last couple of years, right? Like, it's, they were perfect. He did them exactly how you're supposed to do them. And when you look at like that, and you understand why he's in the mix for, you know, challenging the start. And as Okuda is still acclimating, he's going to, there's a legitimate shot that one of them is going to start over the other. And you know, which one of them is it going to be? Now, they've said they don't want to platoon them, right? They don't want to have, like, you know, them rotating series during a regular season. They want one guy just to outright win it. But I think, you know, we've talked about this. Having a good CB3 is not a bad thing.
I was going to say, like, what NFL team gets through a season with their two starting corners,
yeah, right? Exactly.
Every series. Right. I don't know why they're making such a big deal about that.
Now, like, after, yeah, well, right. And, well, and then so with the second team, the starter or the CB4, right? So just like at linebacker, you're looking at linebacker four, you don't know who it's going to be. You don't know who cornerback four is going to be either. They've rotated Mark Gilbert, Savion Smith, Mike Hughes, and Bobby Price all through that spot. It seems like Gilbert and Price have separated themselves a little bit from Savion Smith. Mike Hughes is still kind of flexing back and forth between nickel and on the outside. But Price and Gilbert have kind of, you know, laid their claim for that CB4 spot, because right now Jerry Jacobs is still on the PUP. So he's not, you know, in the mix for that. And it could be Mike Hughes. Like we've talked about, Hughes has that flexibility to play in and out. That's valuable, especially if you're a little bit worried about Okuda. And if Jacobs is still on the PUP, then, you know, that could end up being the spot for Hughes on the inside. When Hughes is in the nickel, he's typically backing up AJ Parker. But more and more frequently, we've been starting to see Chase Lucas with the twos at nickel. And that's what I've been trying to preach here for a while, is that Parker's still got that job, but Lucas is slowly going to start working his way up. Now, he's still making, there's still a rookie curve that he's got to get through, but his communication, his leadership, he's barking out orders and redirecting people. He understands the scheme, which is something that's extraordinarily rare for a rookie. But again, you know, he's played for 6 years under, 5 years under Herm Edwards, right? So, like, that helps. So he's I think he's further along than most seventh round corners would be. Then you add in the fact that he's been flashing on special teams as well. And I'm feeling even more confident in my assertion that he's going to be on the inside of this roster.
He's your guy this year.
He is. He's the guy I've kind of locked onto. He had a pick in one-on-ones on Tuesday. And like, that's hard to do, because the one-on-ones typically favor the offense, and you know, he manages to swivel around and get his hands on the ball, get an interception. And, you know, he still makes mistakes. He's still learning. He's still learning different angles, but he's also, you know, making splash plays here and there as well. And so I'm encouraged by what I see. I think if you're looking at Chase Lucas and his upside and Mike Hughes and his veteran leadership, I think, you know, most teams would say, okay, Hughes is a little bit better, a little bit more solid. He's in a better spot than Chase, so I would keep him. But with this regime and where they are in their rebuild, I think they would favor Chase Lucas over a more steady Mike Hughes because of Chase's upside.
That's interesting. Moving over to the safety spots, the one question I had that popped in my head about Tracy Walker is the expectation is Alex Anzalone is going to have the green dot. Why not Tracy Walker?
Well, you know, they do more. He does a lot of communication on the back end. when the offense comes out of the huddle, right? Like part of his job is to
align the defensive secondary.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so I think they like leaving him with that kind of role and then pairing him with Elliott, giving him that veteran steadiness. The two of them have paired together very well. Coaches like them paired together really well. Tracy has, he's made some subtle changes to his game and coverage that I think are going to help him. For example, he was covering Khalif Raymond, which is a very difficult task because Khalif is just, you know, he's just a little jitterbug with lightning speed as well. And so Khalif is running in out and then up. And so when he cuts out, a lot of times Tracy would crash on that out because he's trying to make the play because he's trying to get his hands on the ball with his length and whatnot, right? But what we've seen more this year is that he crashes, but he also fades when he notices the ball isn't coming. So when he fades, he puts himself in position to be able to run with that up, with that secondary move. And Khalif did this against him where he did that out and then up, and then Trace faded and he put himself in the great spot and he has hands on the ball. He picked Jared Goff off on Tuesday. He's had, you know, like I said, a couple of PBUs, both in one-on-ones and in team drills. And the leadership has really been handed to him in a lot of different ways. And he's embracing that role. Now, they've also taken CJ Moore out of the personal protector role on special teams, and they've given that to Tracy Walker as well. So when Jack Fox goes back to punt, Tracy is the one that makes the adjustments, make sure they knows where they are. And then if someone gets through the line, Tracy has the length and body physicality to be able to, you know, he last fits really well for that role.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think CJ Moore is going to jump when he comes back. He's going to be back in that gunner role, which he started his career at. He was very good at that as a rookie. But they've shifted Tracy into a very important role on special teams as well. And so, yeah, it's Tracy's in a great spot. Elliott's looked sharp.
Very Frank Beamer of Dan Campbell getting his starters in there on special teams.
Yeah. You know, they're not scared to put these guys in spots to help them. Behind the starters though, you've seen some depth as well, right? Like Melifonwu is solely at safety now. Like that's just what it is. Most of the time he's backing up Elliott, but they're also cross training him and having him back up Tracy Walker. So what we're seeing is when Melifonwu is backing up Deshaun Elliott, he's with the twos. And when he's backing up Tracy Walker, he sometimes is with the threes. That then has Kirby adjusting. So when Kirby is backing up Elliott, it goes Elliott, Melifonwu, and then Joseph. But when Kirby is over on behind Tracy, it's usually Tracy and then Kirby's with the twos and then Melifonwu after that. Juju Hughes was getting some run with the twos behind Tracy, but they've kind of started to lean more towards Kirby in some of those situations. Brady Breeze still gets in the mix every once in a while, but I think they've clearly kind of shown their hand that they favor a Tracy Elliott starter with Joseph and Melifonwu as a backup. And Hughes and Breeze are making a case. And then when CJ Moore returns, he's going to make a case, but how many safeties are they going to keep? Because right now, Walker, Elliott, Melifonwu, and Joseph look like their top four guys. And, you know, Moore would have to win a gunner job and prove he can play at safety too, which I think he can. I think they can keep a fifth, especially because CJ Moore's such a valuable contributor. But it is a little harder for Breeze and Hughes, even though they're trying to get in the mix. They're still working on it.
Now, how's Kirby Joseph's adjustment been?
It's good. He's got to, you know, he's finding his voice, right? When he's in that Tracy role, you hear him. You know what I mean? Like he's not quiet about like calling those adjustments out. Like you can hear him, you know, very affirm, very, you know, firmly saying, this is what needs to happen. And so that is a good signal to have.
All right. So that pretty much wraps up the defensive backfield. How about Jerry Jacobs? Has he been on the sidelines?
Yes, he's on the sidelines. He's in the mix. He's talking to Jeff Okuda a ton, but he has not been doing any working with the trainers at this point. CJ Moore has been working with the trainers almost every day. And now he went from just running straight lines to now he's cutting and making adjustments. CJ Moore looks like he could return it any day. Jerry has not started any of that stuff yet. I know he's highly motivated. I know he's trying to pump himself up, but he does not look like he's ready to return. And it could be a little while before we see Jerry.
Now, the defense as a whole, I'm guessing the offense is ahead at this point. Although the defense should be ahead at this point early on in camp.
But it depends. Like there's times when the defense looks really good, but there's times when, like when the pads came on, the offensive line was just so good. The offense looked a lot better.
But because when you look at the roster, it's especially without having Romeo Okwara and Josh Pascal, like the defensive line looks a lot thinner. You know, when you just look at the names, and that's still, it still looks like it's going to be, and the linebackers for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like they're really going to still struggle in the front seven. And you know, this, the big thing this year will be the growth of Aiden Hutchinson and the growth of Aleem McNeil and Onzerike and all those guys. And your aforementioned Malcolm Rodriguez. So, you know, I guess that's really what we got to be looking at as the, as the season gets kicking into gear. So,
there's a lot to like about the defense, though. It just there's going to be hiccups, and it's
got
a
ways to go still.
Yeah, it's going to take time.
Special teams. Been reading about Seibert. Yeah. He might be the guy in the driver's seat in the kicking competition.
Well, maybe. There's a lot of people that really like him. A lot of writers that really like him. But here's what we've seen so far.
We're Patterson guys, just to remind everybody.
Seibert has successfully made, and let me get my numbers here just so I have it, just so I'm not speaking out of turn. Seibert has successfully made 12 of his 14, okay? But the two misses he has are from 48 and 53, I believe. So like he's only missed from distance. He's been really consistent in the short game. Now Patterson is 12 of 13 and he only missed his first kick, which was from 29 yards, which he absolutely just shanked. But since then he's hit both his kicks from over 50 and he's hit every other kick since. So Patterson has looked very sharp and he's been perfect the last two outings. And so I still like where we're at with Patterson. I still think, in my opinion, I think he's ahead, but there are several other beat writers that are firmly in the cyber camp.
Jack Fox and Scott Daly, just nothing special with
Daly's fine. What's interesting is that they have those big screens where you can like run through your plays, like, you know, where the players can go over, coaches can go over, and they can take the iPad and like rewind the plays that were just ran. Almost every morning, Don Muehlbach and Daly go over and run snaps.
Snaps over and over again.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure they're really enjoying themselves.
While doing that. And Fox is, I mean, he looks awesome.
In mid-season form.
When he hits it right, man, oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Have we seen the return units out there? Who's returning kicks?
We have. Khalif has really been the guy. And then Khalil has been his chief competition, Khalil Pimpleton. It sure looks like it's going to be Khalif's job, but they want Pimpleton to get some experience when they've gone to a third. It's been St. Brown, but it's been minimal, mostly the Raymond Pimpleton combo at the top for those two. I do think Khalif is in the driver's seat on kick return. It's been that was punt return. On kick return, Igwe Bukwe has still been the one Trinity Benson has been the two. And then you've seen some other guys kind of mixed in. They've used Josh Johnson in those roles. They've used Pimpleton every once in a while in those roles. That sure looks like Godwin's job as well. Now, Maurice Alexander, who they just signed, was the USFL's leading returner, right? Yep. So like, and he looked very natural fielding punts today, like very natural.
Well,
so,
they just finished playing.
Yeah, we'll see if he gets in.
He's
the
only
mix.
Had a few weeks off.
Yeah. We'll see if he gets in a mix. I don't think he's going to be able to touch Khalif. Khalif looks awesome. So, I still think the incumbents are for the return jobs are probably in the driver's seat.
All right. So I think we covered about everything.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that I've written about is the Gunners.
The Gunners situation.
Melifonwu and Price have been the ones. And if Price isn't there, I do think that's an opportunity for CJ Moore, but I do think Melifonwu is probably going to be one of your starting Gunners. They've used Kirby in those situations, and they've used Benson in those situations. They've used AJ Parker.
Benson's
those are
popping
guys
up a lot here.
Yeah, he's well.
These are indicators that here's guys that are going to make the roster. You know, if we're going to use them in a lot of ways.
And if Jameson stays on the pup, he's probably going to make it, right? And so, sure. And then they've also been cross training some guys for emergencies, just like a kick returner with St. Brown. They're also using. They're showing Jeff Okuda and Owarie how to do gunner roles as well, because if you need an emergency, then they have that experience.
That option.
For the most part, I think it's going to be Melifonwu has probably got one of those spots on lock, and then we'll see if Bobby can do enough to make it to keep it, because he's with the ones on every special teams unit. He's just got to show a little bit more on defense, but they're trying, and he's big and he's fun, but he's just got to do a little bit more.
All right. So that's all we got this week. No new reviews on iTunes podcasts and Spotify. We've cracked 100.
Yeah, 101. And we were at a 4.9. Now we're at a 5.0.
Look at buoyed.
So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So the
thanks to those last few reviews.
Right. Like that's fantastic. So we need to start checking that, I think, a little bit more frequently, because I've been.
Yeah, I want to see what everybody said.
It's been a bad habit of mine to just I forget about it, because I'm so used to iTunes, because we've done it for 4 years with just iTunes. So
right. But hey, we're checking the Spotify, so keep it up. Yep, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I know a lot of people have asked about Google. Google Play hasn't been working recently. That's an issue that they all of a sudden they got an issue with the website for some reason. And they've flagged it because they've sent us like some stuff and we're trying to figure it out. But for whatever reason, it's not really working on Google Play right now.
You're listening to the IT department right here.
Yeah.
About what's going wrong. We'll figure it out. And we're sorry about that. Then go to the web. They're still finding the podcast. Well, maybe they're not. Were they just writing?
No, they are. Because the people that have reached out, you can get it on Spotify. You can get it on all these other podcasting apps. You can listen
on our website.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of resources on how to do it. So hopefully, if they're listening now, they've found a way.
They found it.
Because Google Play is just, I don't know,
we gotta figure it
wrong
out.
Yeah, and it was just like recently, like last month and a half or whatever, they just decided, we haven't done anything different, but they've all of a sudden decided they don't like it, so we're working on it.
All right, so that's going to be it for this episode. Thanks for everybody for listening. We're 6 days away from the first episode of Hard Knocks. Maybe we'll see Eric running around out there. And we're 9 days away from the first preseason game.
Getting there. Getting there soon, real quick.
All right, so that's it. That's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.